was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have ever stolen six-figure sums. Today's title is Honest Dick Tate Wasn't So Honest After All. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, and with me is the man who communicates first and asks questions later. Isn't that part of communication, though?
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that works.
That sounds familiar,
maybe
too.
Maybe you do both of them first.
Right. Well,
I don't know. He is an associate professor of communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
Sometimes the well just runs dry on my responses, you know? I'm like, I reread them, and I think, what am I going to say to Brent's joke? His big book of Jason jokes.
Yeah. Available now. In bookstores everywhere. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, our main event is about a trusted state treasurer who authored the biggest scam in Kentucky history. We will also hear History According to Children in our historian segment. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. The products are real, only the sponsorship is fake.
Don't invest in paint. Until you investigate the paint itself.
Coffey's paint will bear the closest investigation. No secrets about it. It's just pure lead and zinc. No silica, china clay, or any other cheap stuff. That's Coffey's paint. Could anything be better? Coffey's is not the half-lead kind. Put 80% lead with 20% zinc. To add more zinc or use less lead would shorten the life of the paint. Coffey's contains more lead than any other paint. Barger Brothers, Columbia, Kentucky.
Well, well done.
That is word for word the copy on that ad.
Right. No, that was good.
It's not the half lead kind.
Right.
It's got 80% in there, baby.
Yeah, white lead. What does that mean?
That's just an amazing thing, though.
Yeah.
That we find it so dangerous today. And back then, they're saying, look, this is
the best paint.
Cornerstone of the product.
Right.
I'm sure it worked.
It stuck.
It probably didn't come off. It probably didn't paint,
protected your house until way later. Everything.
It could protect it from fire hazards, things like that. I've seen where like painted buildings or tornadoes. Hey, I had my lead paint on there. That tornado couldn't touch it.
Yeah.
That is true.
Well, they didn't know.
No.
I wonder what we're doing now that we don't know.
Oh, cell phone
wavelengths
and things.
Yeah, right.
They had EMFs around them and they didn't even realize they were dangerous.
Yeah, those bananas were listening.
That's all true.
We'll figure. Okay.
Yeah, we'll see. We don't know. Someday they'll say, you know, they were eating pizza this whole time.
Can you believe that they ate that?
Yeah, right. Just chock full of all that bad stuff. That's true. Now it's time for the cutest segment in the history of history podcasting.
Historians.
Make a big canoe with a little log cabin on it.
What do you see?
Oregon Trail! It's the Oregon Trail!
I think it's a boat with a house on it with people in it.
Alright, what else do you see?
And there's a boat. And they're trying to launch it, I think.
For what they had to work with, I thought they did okay here because it's a picture of a 19th century flatboat.
Right.
And they pretty much said, hey, this is a big flatboat.
Houseboat.
Yeah.
Or you could live, it had a shelter on it.
It's kind of like a little yard barn looking thing that you, I guess they put some stuff in there that was supposed to be dry goods or,
right.
or something.
Now, who used
like
these things?
Everybody.
Just
there were two major kinds
goods.
Of boats. There were keel boats and flatboats prior to the invention of the steamboat. And so when you're talking about before that, this is the major way that people are traveling up and down the Ohio.
Right.
And they pretty much nailed it there, I thought. Now it's time for the moment we've all been waiting for.
The main event.
Round one.
Today's main event is about Honest Dick Tate. So first of all, what do you think of that name?
It sounds like he's probably not all that honest.
That's exactly the vibe I get from this.
He wanted people to believe it.
Yeah, see, I think of things like when you go to Mr. Gaddy's.
Yeah.
And it says the best pizza in town, comma, honest.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. They're like, it's a wink, like, not think, really.
Well, I mean, could this be true?
Yeah.
And, you know, is it not?
Sometimes nicknames, though, are the opposite.
Yeah, like a great big guy is like, tiny.
Yeah, you're right. Or just someone's happy Jim, but he's really just a horrible, awful person.
That's true. They really thought he was honest, though. That was sort of like the ironic part of this.
Okay.
I mean, he was super trusted, and everybody thought he was great.
So he starts out as an honest politician.
Yeah, or, I mean, ostensibly, I guess that's how it was.
Yeah.
And then he wasn't in here for a long time, though, and maybe that corrupted him.
You think?
To be.
You think?
Just the time.
The power?
Yeah.
The access? Oh, yeah.
Because there's the money, and he's going to be treasurer forever.
Right.
That's exactly what happened. This was 1888.
Oh, he's the treasurer of something?
State treasurer of Kentucky.
Just all that money. He's just sitting there in like bags of money.
Yeah, and it literally was bags of money in 1888.
Remember Scrooge McDuck would just swim in the money?
That's pretty much where this guy was, except it was your money because you were the taxpayer.
Yeah.
What we've got here is a little newspaper article that tells us about this. And really, you can see the shock written into the newspaper article. When the news was flashed over the wires Tuesday that Treasurer James W. Tate, see that? He's not even really Dick. That's not even his name.
Oh, okay.
James W. Tate. was a defaulter and a fugitive. Those who heard it could scarce believe their ears, much less that Honest Dick Tate, as he was universally called, had done anything wrong. But confirmation almost as strong as Holy Writ, that's known as mathematics, left no hope that he would yet come out right, and those who had reposed the highest confidence in him were forced to surrender all preconceived ideas. For 20 years, Dick Tate has been honored by the democracy with the office of Treasurer of Kentucky, until it had almost arrived at that point when no one would oppose him for it. The good old Democratic doctrine of rotation in office was disregarded in his case, and the result has been most disastrous. At the first of each year, it has become the custom of the auditor to compare accounts with the treasurer. And as usual, General Hewitt, this is the auditor, asked Mr. Tate to present his report. He put him off from time to time, alleging that he was behind in his books.
Yes. Well, this happens from time to time, doesn't it?
Red flag number one. I would really love to look at all these accounts, but I'm just so swamped.
Right.
I'm busy. I can't possibly do it anytime
soon. Got papers just flying up in the air on his desk.
Oh, it's a chaos. It's total chaos. Maybe later we can start adding up all this stuff sometime.
So why is he Dick, though? Why are they calling him Dick?
That is a great question.
Is this fake?
I mean,
it's his nickname, I guess.
Yeah.
He didn't just give it to himself.
Typically, that's Richard. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know how you become
James W.
Dick out of James and W.
Every time you say dictate, though, I think dictate.
Yeah, it sounds like that, too.
You know, it's his name becomes a thing. It's a verb. Right?
I don't know that I'm prepared to answer that question, I would say. Definitely a fake name.
Right.
For sure.
He made that up.
Made it all up, totally. Only referring to his name, of course. The auditor finally became suspicious and last week sent one of his expert accountants to help Mr. Tate out. This gentleman soon found that something was wrong, but Mr. Tate said that when he returned from Louisville, he could explain everything satisfactorily.
Uh-huh.
So here's the, hey, I know you're behind.
Right.
I I understand. I sympathize with that. I've got a guy who's great with math. He can really add stuff. Mm-hmm. He can carry the three like nobody's business.
Got one of those fancy adding machines with the arm.
In that era, I bet they do.
Right. They chunk, chunk, chunk.
That was one of the new Gilded Age inventions that were making things easy. We'll send that guy right over. He'll get you fixed up.
Right.
And so now this is red flag number two. Oh, that's so awesome that you could send this guy over, but I'm out of town. I'm going to be in Louisville on business.
Right, yeah.
And I mean, I just can't possibly get there now. Right.
Is this an elected thing, I guess? Are they elected treasurer, appointed treasurer?
Yeah, no, these are in Kentucky. I think it was that way back then, too.
Well, you said there was an office like 20 years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. So what we've
done is...
Things
like that shouldn't be like a popularity contest, you know? It's a math problem. It needs a professional.
There is a reason for term limits and things, too. I mean,
yeah.
And see all that. He's actually going to be one of the reforms that comes out of him is, yeah, like thinking about that kind of stuff, at least. He was to do this last Friday. That's the meeting with the guy who can do the math. But he failed to appear, and then General Hewitt called in Governor Buckner and Attorney General Hardin for a thorough examination of the treasurer's accounts. It was soon seen that there was a shortage of $200,000, possibly $300,000 and over. And Governor Buckner immediately suspended Tate and placed General Hewitt and Secretary of State Adams in temporary charge of the office. The governor communicated the fact of the defalcation to the legislature and his action in the premises, and a resolution to offer $5,000 for the arrest and return of Tate was immediately adopted. It is said that Tate is not a beneficiary of the big steal, but was led blindly into the trouble by advancing small sums at first to friends and once into it, increasing the amounts and number of loans almost indefinitely. So there's the nature of the scam.
Right.
He's running his own bank out of the state treasury.
Giving his friends money.
Yeah.
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 Well, he's got to be profiting somehow.
You would suspect that it's with interest. And then the idea is that they'll pay the loan back. Then the accounts,
right,
are going to be okay.
The accounts will be the same amount.
And then he gets the interest.
It's like a loan
shark.
People
got the use of the money. And
right,
everybody's cool.
So he's gone then by now. He's got to be gone.
Oh, he's totally gone. And he got away with $300,000, which in 1888 money is a real mountain
of money.
It's like
$8 billion.
I mean, you could easily say 10, 20 times.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Today it would be millions.
Sure.
It'd be millions of dollars today easily. And he has disappeared. Maudlin sentiment. There's an old-timey word right there. It means like an emotional sentiment. Would in a measure relieve him of some of the responsibility of his crime, but it is a waste of sympathy to extend it to a man who has sinned as Tate has done. If ever a man had cause to keep square in the line of rectitude, Tate has, and his crime is therefore unpardonable, and he should not for a moment be considered with even a semblance of forgiveness. By flying, as soon as all hope of further concealment had passed, to that haven of thieves and defaulters, Canada.
Canada.
Uh-huh.
Well, people do go there to escape the law.
Canada takes people in as refugees, right?
Right.
He shows he is no better than the common herd of them, and it is to be hoped that he will yet be brought back and made to do penance for his terrible crime. A crime against the people and a crime against that party which has honored him for 30 or more years with office. That's the Democratic Party. He, having been Secretary of State and Assistant Secretary before his continuous terms as Treasurer.
Now, what about Canada, though, for a minute? Because we do commonly think that. And still today, criminals will try to get over that border.
It's not just criminals. I mean, you think about in the Vietnam War, if you're going to dodge the draft, you run off to Canada.
Still, right.
They've actually got they're proud of that up there. They've got a statue of the draft dodgers.
Okay. Well, I mean, right. I guess that's my question. Like, what exactly is the official policy? If you get to Canada, then what happens? They can't come and get you? Or it's just really hard to come and get you?
It would depend on the politics.
Right, and what the crime is.
And if Canada wanted to protect you or
right.
not. I mean, in this case, they wouldn't have a compelling reason to protect him.
Right.
But by the same token, it's 1888, so you can disappear very easily with fake names.
Right. So much easier back then.
Oh, yeah. You escape the state.
Oh, cameras,
essentially,
photos.
You're out. Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, once you're gone, you're gone in the 19th century. And he knew that, and it was part of the scam.
So they know that he went to Canada?
At this point, I don't know if they know yet. It's kind of a funny thing. Once this happened, he disappeared, and nobody heard from him except that every once in a while, there might be this odd letter that shows up.
He's like, ha, 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 I'm still here.
He's contacting friends and things like that.
Right.
And there's all these weird postmarks. It's things like Canada.
Yeah.
It's things like Brazil.
Sure.
Japan. A lot of really weird, exotic places.
Grow a beard, put on some glasses, and change your name.
That's all they're really talking.
I mean, there was
it.
No name, really. People do. They recognize you if they saw you, but...
But nobody's going to recognize you because they're not
right,
going to see you.
It's a drawing. And right, you're just gone.
It's 1888, and people don't travel the world.
Yeah.
That's the thing about this, too. I mean, you're going to be the one
American. You're in Brazil.
In that place. Yeah.
Right.
You're going to be the one person.
Is that Dick Tate over there? No, that's a Brazilian.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole thing about
colada.
This. And he kept on the move. That was kind of part of the scam, too.
Right.
Eventually, this... One really weird story showed up. It was pretty cool. There was a guy from Kentucky who went to China. And when he got back, he got to thinking about it.
Okay.
And he was like, you know, I met this guy over there.
Oh, okay.
And he was an American.
Right.
Kind of mysterious. Wasn't too forthcoming with details. But he knew all these details about Kentucky politics.
Oh, okay. They had a conversation about Kentucky.
Yeah.
Well,
and
he should have said that. Are you
home.
Dick Tate?
I'm not sure if it hit him then or when he got back or what. But eventually there's this whole big mystery about this. And like, is it Dick Tate? Is it not?
Is it D.B. Cooper?
Is it D.B. Cooper? It's the same kind of thing. Did he get away with it or not?
Right.
And then finally, we don't know the end of the story. We might know the end of the story.
There's another paragraph, though.
There is.
Through his defalcation.
Yeah.
Did you look that one up for me, too?
This is...
Because I need that one.
That's the crime, right?
oh, okay.
Basically, this last part is about the political ramifications.
Oh, you can skip that if you want to.
I think so. We don't need to know.
I don't care.
Because, look, he's a Democrat, and the Republicans are sensing an opportunity.
Oh, sure.
Because this is a very Democratic state in 1888, and the Republicans really haven't done much since they've been founded.
Yeah.
They're barely even a competitive second party.
I mean, in Kentucky.
As of that, in Kentucky.
Right.
At that time. Nationally, of course,
but
they are.
Things like this do swing the political sides because, like, okay, here's this crook that was from this one party. Everybody goes and more likely to vote for the other one.
That can happen, and they're actually worried about that here.
Sure.
But meanwhile, he's gotten away scot-free. Nobody ever really tracked him down. The end of the story might be in California. There's actually a lot of mystery about that, too, because in California, up around the turn of the century, out of nowhere, this dude up and dies, and he's got money, but nobody knows who he is. And the people who are looking at the body think he might bear a resemblance to what this guy would have looked like 20 years after the fact.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that's the end of the
story. Love these stories like this. So, you know, got away with it. Was that him? We don't know. He's somewhere else. Rich guy. Right. Kind of looks like him.
Yeah. And what we know is he got away with it. I mean, there's no catching the criminal on this one. He's gone. The money's gone. And that's the classic Gilded Age scam.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Access to this wealth. You just like... Dollar signs in your eyes, can't resist.
He did.
Yeah, and just gone.
And another thing I can't resist is paying the bills around here because fake history bills don't just pay themselves. Join us for the Big Spring Bicentennial. Help us grow a time capsule preserving our present history. One half of the time capsule will be opened 100 years later in 2076. The second half will be open 200 years later in 2176. Register your name and address to be a permanent part of the big spring time capsule along with other dignitaries. Register at any CNB banking center. Have you ever done a time capsule?
No. I'm too impatient.
I've done one. It wasn't my idea.
What do you mean you did one?
I have taken part in a time capsule.
Okay, so you
It was
put...
in elementary school.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, that's true. They do that.
Oh, you did one in elementary school?
No, but I know that they would do things like that.
Yeah.
And they'd dig it up like 10 years later or something like that, right?
I don't know how long it was supposed to be, but we've dug our... It might still be there because...
Or maybe you dug one up that was really old? Is that what you mean?
We didn't do that. We put one in.
Ah.
And see, the thing about it was that school didn't last very long. It's now closed.
Oh, go dig it up, Brent.
I think if we could find a metal detector. It was out around the front of the school.
Do you know where it is?
I know the approximate area.
Oh, we're doing this.
Live remote.
And they were on the run. There's like $10,000 in there that the kids collected, or 10,000 pennies.
There's going to be a pencil. There's a pencil from the school store.
I do have a vague notion, something about grade school with that.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the whole neat ideas, though. They bury stuff. You dig it up and like, oh, here's what people were like back then. Here's their name written on a piece of paper.
But will you dig it up? See, that's the thing. Like, that elementary school's closed. It's been closed for 20 years. I mean, for all I know, it's still there.
Forget about it.
Yeah, of course. Or this, 2076?
Yeah.
We're not even close to that yet.
Right.
2176? Is somebody in
there?
2176 going to even know that this happened?
Yeah. So you register your name and address. The people in 2176 open it up and go, oh, okay, this person by this name lived here. Who cares? I could have Googled that. It's still in there.
With your microchip,
don't they put
in 2176?
Yeah, they don't even have
to
dig it up. They'll just look at it with their
laser
beam eyes.
And when you think about it, it does the search automatically.
For real, I mean, like, I get it though. It's like a right.
Yeah.
If you could find one that was like 500 years old, 1,000 years old.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's definitely
value in it. I guess we call those tombs, don't we?
They're in Egypt.
We just dig them right
up.
That's true. Anyway, okay, so yeah, this really happened though.
Yeah, and I suppose it's there somewhere. I mean, they haven't dug it up. We're still not on the schedule yet.
I think this was a real thing, though, that people did like to do. It was a bicentennial.
Oh, yeah, yeah, big thing about celebrating and anniversaries. And
it promotes the bank.
That's what they were thinking about, for sure. Now, Jason, we have arrived at... Da-da-da-da.
Right.
There's your music. The takeaway.
Oh, boy.
Your big thought about... Everything honest dictate.
Oh, you want me to talk about that guy some more?
Or it could be time capsules.
Yeah.
Or it could be flat boats.
I kind of like that. Right. Well, I like this guy. It's just interesting to me how you could get away with things and disappear.
Oh, yeah.
Because really, you just go out west, call yourself something else, and unless you happen on somebody who knows you, you're going to get away with it. For the most part.
That's what
Lay
he did.
Lay low. Don't use your real name. There's no photo IDs, no social security number. You know, you're just somebody else.
Yeah. And he had the money, so it wouldn't be like he had explaining it to do or needed a job or anything.
And I like the guy, like, sent postcards. I don't know if he was taunting anybody, but, you know, just send him in, like, don't forget, I got away with it.
Old Honest Dick still cooking out there.
Right.
That's true. We have now turned to the final page of this chapter, but never fear, Old Kentucky Tales never fails to return, season after episode after episode.
This is the second episode.
After episode.
Yeah.
You can download even more episodes on iTunes or the NPR One app. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or rate us. If you did not like what you heard, you X'd out of this thing way back. Special thanks to our producer, Todd Birdsong, the Paducah School of Art and Design, and WKMS, and the rest is history.